This is the second Born About Women lesson, Sarah the Wife. And I call it Sarah, Sarah, Where Are You? And we're now in group 11. So it came to pass when he was coming here to enter into Egypt that he said, Sarah, unto Sarah his wife, behold, now I know that you are very beautiful and fair to look upon. Now I have heard two different things about this word Sarah. I have heard that fair means beautiful, and I looked it up in the back of the concordance, and I got all the beautiful and pretty and calmly and fair, you know, for that Hebrew word. And I don't speak Hebrew, some of the languages I have forgotten. But I've also heard that fair could mean very light, you know. And that maybe the women in the land were darker women, and that's why Sarah was such a prize, because you try to think, why was she such a prize at 65? And yet, as I was telling the girls in the office, well, I don't think that's so funny, because mine was 65-year-old women, I'm much more beautiful than they used to be when I was 18. And there is a maturity, right, in 65. I'm not there yet, but I'm very willing on how to get there. But anyhow, Sarah thought she was beautiful, and the kings and the people thought she was beautiful. And I think she must have been very lovely. So he says in verse 12, if you say you're my wife, they're going to kill me so that they can have you. So she really must have been a prize. And he was so fearful. And you know, I don't think Sarah was exactly proud of this fear of Abraham. And he would have been come across a much stronger, husband image to her if he hadn't been so fearful. But she went along with this lie. She went along. Now, Sarah, I don't believe, trusted in the true God of Abraham at this time. And she went along. And Abraham really should have been a better example, I think. So, when we got there in verse 14 in Egypt, they did see her. And she was very fair. Because the top couldn't hear. Look at her. And so when the prince, also Pharaoh, saw her and commended her before Pharaoh, the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abraham well. You know, here's your brother, and I'll give you sheep and oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses. And what happened to Pharaoh in verse 17?
Plague.
A plague. And I wonder what it was. And his house would be a great place. Why? Because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And so there was all this, and I don't know what it was. Hi! Here comes my two sisters. Greetings. Back there's another chair. Hi. Oh, we're sorry. Sharon even got here. Good. No, you are. We're in verse 11 of chapter 12. And I don't know if you know everybody. There's Debbie next to you. The girl still standing up is Sharon. And the girl sitting down is Jackie. And that's Debbie. And another Sharon. And you know Dolly, don't you? And Ellen. And then Martha. And over here is Pat. And Kathy. And I'm Bonnie. I don't even tell you who my wife. And then Bernice. And Mary. You may know Mary. Mary comes from my class. I don't know if you can hide. You can shut that door, Sharon, and then you sit in better. Okay, we have all these plagues now, and I wonder what kind of plagues they were. Let's think about it, because again, it's going to be a plague on a house, and maybe we can, by that time, think of what maybe some of them might have been. And Sarah said, what in the world is going on, Abram? Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? So somehow there must have been an investigation, and they found out that Sarah was Abram's wife. I was thinking as I was teaching this, there was another person that lied. Didn't Jacob lie? Or was it Isaac? I didn't go. And how that king knew is that he saw him making love to his wife. You know. She's no sister.
Sarah married to Sarah?
Sarah's married to Abram. No, she was in the harem, and there was a big plague. Now, later on, there was a plague, and I don't know what the plague was, but I thought maybe it might be some kind of itching.
I'm making this up.
Something that kept people apart. Which I have at least ever heard you teach before. So I'm just trying to think what could keep people apart. And so check Sarah. She's falling fast for the typewriter. So verse 13, how do you like that one, Cindy? And I'm plaguing it. I haven't gotten to talking to myself in public yet. I do at home. Okay, so now that's what we have.
How did Sarah find out that she was...
That's what I don't know.
I was under the impression that Sarah had a dream.
I think it must... I don't know, because... It doesn't say.
It says later on, it doesn't say here.
Doesn't say here, and I don't
think later on.
No.
Oh.
I don't think it does. I think maybe because he had the plague, this is what I think. Because he had the plague in the house, and he's trying to think, well, why are we going through all this? And they're probably superstitious, and so they probably investigated. That's my own opinion. Do any of you have an opinion? I know one time, like I said, they saw the man and wife together, and so they said, what do you... Forget if that was Isaac or that was Jacob. Yeah. But later on, that did happen with one of the deceivers. So they went up out of Egypt, finally, in verse 13. Now, if they hadn't gone into Egypt, which is a type of the world, you know, Egypt is a type of the world, if they hadn't gone into Egypt, then they wouldn't have that problem anyhow. But every problem that comes into a woman's life, have strengthened her, right? And you can look back and you can see, right, Monica? By 1700, we need so much strength. And every problem that comes in makes you be able to stand a little better the next time. And then when a real drastic thing, you think, oh, this is bad, and this is bad, and this is bad. But then when something really drastic comes into your life and you look back and I see why the Lord was strengthening me so I can stand. This reminds me of the trees when we went to Dallas Seminary. And we lived in a trailer behind a seminary, which they don't have now. And it was a more folksy seminary when we were there. And now it's, you know, real big business. And anyhow, we lived in trailers up behind there. And, oh, this has nothing to do with Sarah, but whenever I think of that trailer, I think of all of these big name speakers that we hear on radios, and we were with them in Trailerville, and I think of them as little fat men in their bathrobes. Probably not in this common washroom, you know, and I just can't think of them any differently. Or I think of that one man who's very well known, and he was so poor in seminary. It was so poor, and they lived in this little tiny house, and his leg was really skinny, and I saw her recently, and she looked so nice. So, put him in ministry so you can fatten up, I guess. Well, anyhow, what was that all for? I don't know what I told all about that for. Oh, yeah, the trees at seminary. And we had an ice storm the first time we lived there, the first year we lived there, and I worked in the library, and the library... It wasn't that tall, but it was taller than, you know, the houses were down, and it was up where the trees were, and the ice was so heavy on the trees I could look out and see them falling, you know, branches falling all over, and then there was these great big trees in Trailerville, but off more in the parking lot, and it came down a great big old tree, and I thought, I was from Ohio, and we had much worse things in Ohio. And I thought, how could that tree stand that ice? And then I realized it had never been tested. It had never been tested. And its first real bad ice storm, evidently, was it couldn't take it, and it fell over. And it reminds me of my uncle, that he never married, and he'd been in the war and all that, but evidently he hadn't had a personal test in the family when my grandmother got very sick, and she had a couple of... Oh, I'll never see it, but I want to say embolism, but I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Right. Insurance, right. And she had a couple of days, and Uncle just went completely to pieces, and when my aunt came up there, he'd be crying, and he's never been the same since. And for a lot of reasons, but he's never been the same. And I realized then that Uncle had never had to stand any strain. And so the big strain that came into his life, he had never been tested along this way with this, like someone very sick like this.
You didn't understand
that? Evidently not. Right. And for the life of me, I don't know. Oh, about being in Egypt. Okay, Abraham was rich in cattle and silver and gold. Now this is where we're learning about his riches and he had developed that, this. And I didn't mean to get the impression he was poor when he left Earth of cattle and silver. I don't think he was, but he became more and more wealthy. So he has another altar, and he's back here at Bethel again, and his tent's here. And Sarah is probably watching. And now we have a conflict. Remember, I like to think that maybe Lot was sort of like a son to Sarah, or else a little brother. Like our Danny is 16 years younger than our oldest son, Don. And we always say this thing happens to us. We'd like him to stay there and live with Don. And Dan is like sort of like a son, but he's a brother. But there's a certain affection. Just like Reggie, my son-in-law, is a whole lot younger than his big brother. His big brother is almost like a father. And so there's an affection there, almost like a father. So I feel that Lot, perhaps, to Sarah, he has his closeness. And to Abraham. And so that's why they went up there again. But even last week, we saw this one king who had to separate himself from his wicked mother, who was afraid of the Lord. And sometimes we can't truly serve the Lord as women unless we separate ourselves in a final way. And so separation had to come because there was strife between Lot and Abraham and between their herdsmen in verse 7. Now why do you think of what might have been strife even though they starved? Verse 6 says the lion is not able to bear them. Why could there have been some strife? They were herdsmen, so that meant they had cattle and sheep. And then Lot chose the field. He looked and he saw green grass and all that, and that was great for his cattle. And he left Abraham with a more barren place. So I believe there wasn't enough pasture for their animals and for their sheep. And that caused some of the strife. And then also maybe God and the belief in God and the conviction that Abraham had could have caused some of the strife. I don't know. I'm just conjecturing. But Lot chose, in verse 11 of 13, he chose the plain and the beautiful. And Abraham stayed. And verse 13, we see about the wicked man of Sodom. But after Lot was gone, and remember the father had died, Terah, and Lot was gone, and verse 14, God says to Abram, God speaks to him again. He hadn't spoken to him for a long time. I don't think since he came out of the Ur of Chaldeans, but I may be wrong. Abraham did offer sacrifices. We read about that. So God says, lift up now, thine eyes, and look. So this is important. It's something you have to do now. Lift up thine eyes now. So often, and Sarah was there, and she probably saw him. And probably Sarah may have liked the green grass better, too. And she probably thought, why in the world did Abram not choose first? He's the older one, and rank has privileges. And why did he let Lot choose? But see, Abram had faith, the greater faith in Lot, in God. And look up now by now. And sometimes in our troubled lives, because God is testing us and making us a strong tree, he might say, look up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. And this is going to be a great place for you, Abraham. And for all that you see is going to be yours, and your seed forever. Now what does this mean, your seed forever? What does seed, the children? It doesn't mean like, I'm going to say sunshine, sunflower seeds, or anything like that. But some people might not understand Bible talk, but your seed forever. And the seed with that vegetable seed, there's life in that seed, right? And it continues on and on, and it bears more vegetables and continues on and on. Like a pumpkin, you can save the seed and grow a pumpkin and save more seed and grow. But this is what it was for Abraham with his children, which was going and going and going and going. But here he was, he didn't have any children. And he was over 75, because that's when he started. So he says, I'm going to make your seed as the dust of the earth. And I'm going to make it as the star of the ground. And here, Sarah is wondering. Now, I wonder, did Abraham share this with Sarah? Or did he decide not to tell her? She didn't understand. She wouldn't understand about God and about this special thing. I don't know. Maybe Sarah would have learned to walk closer to God and to the Lord God of Abraham if he would have shared more with her. I don't know. I don't know which it is. And so then Abraham removed of his tent and they dwelt by the tree of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built an altar there unto the Lord. And there Sarah looked, and he's still building his altar. Now, there were no Jews, and there were no Hebrews or anything until Abram. And if we happen to come across it as we're reading, there's a certain spot in here where he's called a Hebrew for the first time. And so Abraham is the beginning, and Sarah the beginning of the Jewish race, which most of you know. Well, now in chapter 14, we have Lot in a big battle. He chose to go to Sodom and Gomorrah. And we know that Sodom and Gomorrah turned out to be very, very wicked. And it was very wicked when Lot got there. And when Lot chose by the eye of sight, human eye, where Abraham had an eye of faith. Lot had a wife who probably was a heathen woman who wasn't going along with the God of Abraham. Like Sarah was being drawn into it and willing to stay there and not rebelling so much that she left. We don't know if Sarah rebelled some, but being a woman, I'm sure she did some. I'm sure there were times when she got tired of her traveling about so much, but she stayed there with Abraham and she put up with it all. And she didn't yearn for the big city life this time she came from. That last life was different. And she was nothing but a pair of socks. But that's what she turned to. All of her faith was nothing because she didn't have any. But Sarah developed into, if we wanted to make a statue, a marble, beautiful marble statue, where Lot's life turned into a pair of socks, literally. So here Lot's there, and there was a big battle going on, and the king of Sodom, and some people that, like, this person who came to pass in the days of Amisbel, king of Shinar, and Barak, king of the Philistines, and these other kings, but there was a big battle, and I don't want to go into the battle because this isn't about Sarah, but the only thing about Sarah is that Lot was captured. Oh, how Sarah must have felt terrible, especially if she had strong affection for Lot, which she would, because he was having the same father. All of these relatives are extra special. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Lot.
Well, that was her nephew. And yes, it would be her nephew two ways, because she would have to sister away with him. So it was very tied up with her love for the family. And then he was caught, and he was caught in the slime pit, and stuck there in his slime pit. And so Abraham learned about it, and he got his servants together. And it tells him here how many servants he had, which I don't remember right off, but over 100 servants. A great big, a big amount of servants that were born in his house, many of them. 318, that sounds fine. And, he armed his trained servants born in his own house, 318. Now, these were men that were loyal to Abram, and they were loyal to Sarah, too, because they were born right there in his house. So he trained them. So I'm thinking Abraham must have a little army that he has, because they must have some sort of military group. and he did a brilliant job of rescuing Lot and defeating these people who were against these other kings. So the king of Sodom in verse 17 wanted to reward Abraham, and then Melchizedek pops up here, and he's the type of Jesus Christ. So let's go on, and Sarah is noticing all of this. So we go on now to verse 15, and notice God says to Abram, "Fear not." Now why does he say that? Here we see how brave Abraham was in chapter 14, and then we saw how afraid he was in the other chapter before the king, and so we see that he says, "Fear not." And he says, Abraham said, "Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless?" And he longed for a child. He was becoming wealthy, but all the wealth could not satisfy him. He and God were having wonderful fellowship, but this couldn't satisfy him or take the place of a son in his life, of an heir. And so he believed God. When God reaffirmed, "You're going to have an heir," and in verse 6, he counted it to him for righteousness. And God said, "I am the Lord God who brought thee out of the Ur of the Chaldeans." And he says, he reassures him. So now we get down to Sarah in chapter 16. She's in her tent. She sees this great, great feeling. She sees how he wants a child and she wants a child. But he seems to be more concerned when he talks to his God. He's more concerned all the time about the child. And she feels so inadequate. Perhaps not only in childbearing are there times when women, feel inadequate. Because some of us are not inadequate in childbearing, but we have other ways that we feel that we fail our husbands. So we can put ourselves in Sarah's shoes and think, oh, if there was only some way, only some way we could feel this need in our husband. So she comes up with an idea which is not from the Lord. But we have to remember that Sarah, and perhaps even Abraham, did not know that the one who was going to be the mother of this promised seed would be Sarah. And all he was with was a promised seed. And so, of course, we know it was going to be Sarah, because we know the end of the story. But at that time, maybe Abraham didn't. But still, he had not had any other women in his life. Now, when they were in Egypt before, they picked up an Egyptian slave girl. I'm sure that's where they got Hagar. And she may have been a very beautiful girl. She may have been very young when she came into Sarah's tent. And Sarah may have taught her everything. And they have taught her not only how to cook and all these things of how to keep her house different than Hagar's house, but she may have taught her all she knew about women and men. And so Sarah's thinking, well, it's the custom to, if you have a slave girl and you don't have a child, but you can give the slave girl as a concubine to your husband. And then the child that comes from that union would be Sarah's son. So Sarah consists with very logically, but not according to God's plan. And sometimes as wives, we can give suggestions to our husbands, and they're very wrong, and they're not according to the word of God. Later, Sarah speaks almost as from God when she says, "Cast out the bondwoman. Cast out this bond slave. Cast out the son. He can have not be in the same tent with Isaac, because Isaac has a certain covenant relationship with God and Abraham." And God said at that time to Abraham, "Listen to her." But God didn't say here, "Listen to her." Still, Abraham should have continued by faith. But if you had a beautiful young slave girl in your house, and you were a man, and your wife was encouraging you, and it was customary with all the other people, how long would you disregard and not think, "Well, this is pretty good, perhaps this is how my seed will come"? And so there they were, in the tent together. But Sarah discovered that it wasn't what she thought it was going to be at all. It was terrible to her soul, and Hagar became a different person. Hagar would travel around, and she would boast because she was bearing the son or the child that Sarah could not bear. And she had something over her mistress, and it was never the same. And Sarah was very mean to Hagar and put Hagar out, and Hagar left. And Hagar was out there, but God spoke to Hagar and told her she would have a son, and his name would be Ishmael, and he would have a great nation. And he would have some blessings, but he was not the promised seed. Now, I think it's very interesting to see that God, the Lord God, spoke to Hagar before he ever spoke to Sarah. So let's go on now. We see Abraham was 86 in verse 16 when Ishmael was born. And Abraham loved Ishmael. He loved Ishmael. Verse 17. Sunday night, I'm talking again. I'm sorry. I just have so much to cover, but you just have to keep talking. But interrupt like you did. So when Abraham was 99 years old, the Almighty came to be found again. And he said, be thou perfect. But he didn't mean perfect without any flaw, because no human being can be perfect, because all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And our perfection before God is only because of Jesus Christ and his perfection. And he said, be thou perfect, and according to the little note in the middle, that means upright and sincere. And I make covenant with you. And Abraham fell on his face before God. And Sarah may have been watching and thinking, what is he doing now? What is he doing out there on his face? Who is he talking to? You know, and she may have thought he was a little spaced out or something. But except for the fact that she had seen him follow God before. And each time Sarah saw Abraham, she was learning. Not only about her husband, but she was learning about her husband's God. And so let's see. Your name is no longer going to be Abram, it's going to be Abraham. In verse 5. And you're going to be exceedingly fruitful. And kings are going to come from you in verse 6. Well, you can see Abraham scratching his head and wondering, and I'm going to establish a covenant with you in verse 7. And you're going to keep my covenant in verse 9. And this is part of my covenant. All the male children in your tent and in your domain are going to be circumcised. And this is a sign. This is going to be a sign of separation. And when the babies are 8 days old, every new baby is going to be circumcised. So now I've got to tell you about my little grandson, Jonathan David. I told you how he was born last week with a midwife. And now I've got to tell you how he was circumcised. Because they didn't have a hospital and the baby was born at home, he wasn't circumcised in the hospital like, you know, most of our boy babies were, if they were circumcised. So after a while, they called a Jewish rabbi. And the Jewish rabbi, they had taken Jonathan David to a doctor, I guess, right? The day after he was born, he raised him Richard, and they went to the doctor, out in the car to the doctor to see what he was out of. And I think the doctor gave him a shot to be sure that would coagulate. So when he was circumcised, it was going to be all right. And so after a while, I thought it would be 8 days, but I don't know if it was exactly 8 days or not. I don't think it was quite. But the Jewish rabbi came. And I forget if it was $65. And they put a little something, a little cap right over his little male organ. And that cuts it, if I understand. I only heard this once, so I don't have it. And it just cuts it right away. And the baby didn't cry about it or anything. It wasn't very bloody or anything. This is interesting because even though I had four boys, I don't know too much about the circumcision. And I think, I thought they tied into something. I can't remember if the man said that. I think my husband's on the phone now. But like this in the... Richard, none of them held his hands up. Maybe the daddy held his hands up. Maybe she did. Some did. And that, he didn't like that. Little Jonathan didn't like that. He cried about that, but he didn't cry about the circumcision. And I thought, I just wanted to have everything in bed. Everything was just great. So when I saw here about all these people, 300 and how many servants that were fighters? So how wealthy Abraham was by this time. And see, he's done. When Ishmael was born, like he's 99 now, so when he left, he was 75, so he knows that he's that much richer. And he's invested in his cattle and all this, and he has all of these servants, and all of these boys, and men, and handyman being circumcised. That was certainly a bloody time, right? You know? And although they said there wasn't too much blood for Jonathan, but it certainly was uncomfortable. And all the men and the babies, and no matter who, they all had quite a few days there when they were very uncomfortable. And I'm sure the older men were more uncomfortable than the little babies. So here it is, and everyone is going to be circumcised. So Sarah saw all this, and Abraham must have had to explain it to everybody about the sign. So they were all learning, that about God. Yes.
Abraham must have been a very, very powerful, influential, almost like a bearing person. Certainly was a very personal thing.
Yeah.
And as we read here, it's an exceptional story thing for adult males. And Abraham was over there with the 318.
Yeah, that's just the ones that were trained for fighting.
Right.
Yeah, well, the other ones.
You know, that on a one-to-one basis, it's an awful lot of time. To talk someone into it.
Uh-huh.
My son, he did it for maybe a couple hundred men, so he must have had a lot of influence. And
at least 318 were born in his own house, so they all had fathers. Yeah, I didn't think of it, but 650 or something, and then there might have been babies, little toddlers, boys, and all this. So how many? 800 at least.
Very easy to bring it up to that.
Yes.
But they did do it.
They were all circumcised. Well, he must have been so convicted and convincing of his God, and then he was a strong man. He was a follower of God, but a leader of men.
Yes.
So, can we just imagine how difficult it was to be married to him?
That's the funniest point I was
going to
make.
Oh, I'm sorry,
you should do it. A man like that to be married to.
Yes. And so when we read in 1 Peter about Sarah as being our example, we really have an example there of what she had to go through. And I've got to read through it because I really want to read my thing to you if I can. So then we see that the promise was in verse 15 that Sarah was going to be the mother and she was going to have the blessing. And Abraham laughed. And one of the things I wanted to do was write down all the laughter, but I waited too long. I didn't start it when I first started studying, and I didn't get back. Abraham laughed and said, he was 100 years old, and Sarah 90 years old, and were they going to have a child while they were past the age? How many years past the menopause was Sarah? And Abraham was old, too. But God said she was going to be the one. And he said, oh, that Ishmael would live before you. But Ishmael was not going to live before him. And so this time next year, you then have a child. So then, in verse 25, this tells when Abraham was circumcised. He was 99 years old. And his son was 13. So Ishmael was circumcised, even though he was the beginning of the Arabs. So then in verse chapter 18, we see that Abraham was sitting in this tempter, and these three men came. Now they were ordinary men. One was a theophany, Jesus Christ, and the other two were angels. These were the same three men that went to Sodom and Gomorrah and destroyed it and pulled Lot out almost by the hair to get him out of there. And so Sarah was behind these men and went in the tent, and when Abraham saw them, he ran to the tent and said, Sarah, get ready and make my favorite recipe of cakes or buns. And so she began doing that, and then he ran to the herd and he got a calf, and they had to kill it, and they had to dress it. So these men, and we'll call them men, even though they were different than the men that we know, it took a long time. It takes a while to prepare a calf from the beginning, right? And he picked his very best calf and got it in and everything. And then these men said, where is Sarah thy wife? Now, did they know where Sarah was? Because one of them was the theophany, Jesus Christ, how he appeared in the Old Testament. Yes, they knew. But they just wanted to ask this question for a reason, and
Abraham said, "Behold, in the tent." Now, what if she hadn't been there? What if she hadn't been where she was supposed to be in a home? Then wouldn't Abraham's faith have been read? And your son's going to have, your wife's going to have a son in verse 10. And Sarah was there, listening in the tent, and she heard it. And she was very advanced in her age, and she didn't even have a period every month, and then she didn't even remember what it was like, and she didn't even have clothes around left over so long ago. And what did she do in verse 12 within herself? She laughed. So Abraham had laughed, and she laughed when they were told it. And then he said, and I loved it, verse 12, "Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, 'After I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?'" Now, I remember this from when I was a child, hearing this about, "Shall I have pleasure?" And that means sexual relations. And she was saying, "Shall I," and I looked this up in the Oxford English Dictionary, right out there, somewhere on the floor. And it's very, very unabridged, very thorough dictionary. And they confirmed this to my thinking. And also, when I looked up in the concordance in the back, it was like something that you do together. That's the idea. But in the Oxford English Dictionary, for this word pleasure, in the King James language, it meant sexual pleasure oftentimes. And for an illustration of what they meant, they used this verse: "Shall I, when I'm old, have pleasure in my Lord being old also?" And I think this is so interesting. So not only have they had a change of life, but I would assume that Abraham and Sarah didn't come together very much. And let's turn over to I don't know which verse to turn over to. I'm so excited about this one. Hebrews 11 in the Hall of Fame chapter. 11:11. Now that should be very easy for you to remember your Sarah verse, Hebrews 11:11, because you add it by faith. And through faith also, Sarah herself received strength to conceive. And this, you know, here she says, within herself, "Shall I, when I'm old, receive pleasure?" So part of this, I believe, would be having strength to carry out the act of intercourse with your husband, to have strength. And she said, "Shall I?" Sarah herself received strength to conceive. Now God gave her special strength in her old age to even go through the act of marriage, to be able to conceive a child, to say nothing of the fact that she was dead and he was dead. We read that in Romans, in the verses that I have there about Romans, in Romans 4:19, "And being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead, when he was about 100 years old." Abraham's faith was greater than his ability to reproduce. But as when God performed a miracle in Abraham's life, after Sarah died, he married Keturah and he had other children. And when Ishmael was born, he wasn't dead. His body was not dead as far as them being able to fly with children. When he was about 100 years old, "Neither yet the deadness of Sarah's womb," and I see trouble typing here, sorry. "And he said," and so his body was dead and her womb was dead, "and yet she received strength." So when the actual time came, when she and Abraham came together on their marriage bed to have this time, when they were going to come together to have this promised seed, Sarah had much faith. She had to have faith. She had as much faith as Abraham. And here we see that she did have faith in God to conceive. And she had faith to deliver the child and strength to deliver the child. Her faith was that God would give her the strength. She believed God that he would do it. and she was past age, but she judged him faithful who had promised. Hadn't he come through in many other times in their life, as she was being tested with Abraham? So let's see. And then let's turn to this Peter. This Peter, I just can't pass it by. He's so tickled. I don't know if I've been teaching. Yes, they're all listed in there. 1 Peter 3:6. I should have had two nights to say, and I knew it when I put it down on that table. Like I could have talked from the lesson on there. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. When I was doing this in Genesis 18, 12 last night, and I was reading this over and over, and all of a sudden, shall I have pleasure and my Lord being also, oh, my Lord. And I thought, I'm not swearing. No, I'm swearing. And of course, it's a small L and I looked over here again and reviewed this, calling him Lord, even as thou obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Now, this is where she called him Lord. Of course, you all know this. This is where she called him Lord, right there in verse 12 of chapter 18. And it had to do with their marriage relationship. And that's again, Dolly, and I thought, oh no, have I been teaching this wrong? And I thought, I've got to look at my husband, let him know through that chart, right? And I was putting this on a different kind of obedience so much, which I think is true also. But here, it's to do with sex, perhaps. Now, as I said, I didn't look it up in any other book. But this is Bonnie in the Lord. And she obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement or terror or not becoming fostered. So I'm not going to dwell on this a long time, but here is the only place that I have found so far where she actually called him Lord, but then we don't have a lot of quoting of what she did, was to do with when she was going to be with him to have the promised seed. So how about that? And the Lord said unto Abel, why did Sarah laugh? In verse 13, in chapter 18. And then the Lord said, is anything too hard for the Lord? And Sarah's going to have a son. And what did Sarah do? She denied that she said. She said, I didn't laugh. And why? Because she was afraid. She was afraid because these people, these guests of her husband, were not ordinary guests. They knew so much about her. They knew what she said within herself. She said, all this within herself. Have I become old that I have pleasure in my Lord being old also? She said all that. Nobody heard her. And they said, you laughed. Even though it was silently, you did laugh. And then they went on, and then they talked about Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham pleaded for at least 10 righteous. And so then my backslid inciting happened in chapter 19. Well, this is Lot, but we're not going to talk about Lot, and then Sodom is destroyed. So then we have chapter 20. They went still down south more, and they sojourned in Gera. Oh, I think I misspelled that in my... I wrote G-E-E-R. Well, just forgive me for spelling. You just love me. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, again, she's my sister. And Abraham said to Sarah, now that, Abimelech, the word, he's going to say, you're beautiful, he's going to want you, and so you're my sister. And by this time, Sarah had progressed in believing God. She had it, God had spoken to her right there, you know, with the fatty calf and the cakes and everything, and when she was hiding behind the door. But she's still going on with this deceit. I suppose she rationalized it by saying, well, I am his half-sister. So anyhow, they were there in this palace of Abimelech, and another plague came. And all of the women and the men, they could not have children. The wombs were shut up. I wanted to see where that exactly said that, but I can't find it in a hurry. And also, we want to notice that a lot of sheep, like the Abimelech gave them sheep, and there's 14 and men servants and women servants and all that. And restored Sarah, his wife, to Abimelech, because he discovered that all of this, the rooms were all shut up, they weren't having, couldn't have children, and verse 18, for the Lord had completely closed all the rooms of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Now, what could have happened to Sarah? Here she received the promise of God, and what could have happened to her in Abimelech's palace? She could have been with Abimelech, and she could have borne a child by the wrong man, because her womb was being opened by God. But this did not happen. The Lord protected Sarah. Verse 16, Abimelech says, behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver, Sarah. Behold, he, Abraham, is to be a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee, and with all others, thus she was reproved. Abimelech, a seasoned king, was reproving a woman who was now called the princess. When did she get her name? Did she get it back there by the in-law? Eventually she had this new name. And she was, and Abraham was a friend of God. He was a mighty one with God. And they lived close to God. And the deceiving king was rebuking Sarah because she was deceiving and not staying with her husband. And he said, you should be with your husband and stand with your husband. And he should be proud to stand by you and not be afraid, even if you're beautiful, because the very fact that you're with your husband, he is your protection. And you're not going to have all these people looking at you and wanting you and desiring you because they're not going to know you're a married woman. And he rebuked her. So she stands rebuked and reproved. So, in verse 21, chapter 21, the Lord came, in verse 2, Sarah conceived, she was given strength in her old age, and she bore a son, Isaac. And then they circumcised Isaac on the eighth day. And Sarah said, God hath made me laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me. Abraham was at least 100 years old here, and she must have been, I had it figured up the other day. Forget, 99 or something? No, she's 10 years younger, so like about 90 or something. Don't hold me to that. It's in my notes. Okay. I like to think that Sarah had a real sense of humor. Or if maybe to live with Abraham, she developed one. Because we hear her laughing a lot. And perhaps when you live with a very domineering man, you have to joke or die. One of the others. So we'll just photograph it there, not come in any further. The child grew. She nursed her baby. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham had a big feast. And I learned in the Oxford English Dictionary that when your baby has been weaned, he can be called a weanling. You know, during that time. Now, Hagar's son Ishmael was still around and he was mocking, and I don't know what he was saying or how he was mocking, but he was mocking. And Sarah observed this. Now Sarah was learning more and more. Turn back to 1 Peter. You just have to read all my beautiful words at home that you paid 50 cents for. Should have made you pay a dollar and you would have read them for sure. I don't know if they're that beautiful or not. I just get such a blessing, and my mother's not so good. 1 Peter, let's jump back there to 1 Peter 3 and see. Sarah had made some changes in her life. And I like to use my sanctified imagination and think what some of these changes would be. I suppose she had done herself quite well on the outside. She was beautiful, and Abram was very proud of her. But she was learning to adorn her inner self, the hidden woman of the heart, 1 Peter 3, 4. With incorruptible ornaments. And she was learning how to develop a meek and quiet spirit, and which in the sight of God was a great price. And so she was doing all this. She was learning to have a chaste manner of conduct, and she coupled it with the fear of God. She was learning to be in subjection and obeying her husband. So she was clothing her inside with meekness and a quiet spirit. And verse 5, for after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husband. Sarah was one of the holy women. And I think this is very interesting. When she started out, no one would have called her one of the holy women. And Abraham was the one who was told to leave, and she went with him. And I think when we go with our husbands, our Christian husbands especially, and we go with them, not that I mean not to go along with the unsaved husband, but we have to weigh, if they are not following God, we cannot disobey God to go with our unsaved husband. I think you understand my view, so I won't go there. Because I don't want to stay there. Or should I? Okay. I don't mean you're not supposed to obey your husband if he isn't saved. But there are times when a husband is so contrary to the word of God, just like there are times when a government is so contrary to the word of God, that you cannot obey that government. And remember when we read in Acts, we must obey God rather than men. But the rule is to be obedient to your husband. But if he is so contrary to the word of God, and I'm sure you can think of times when things would be contrary. So Sarah, I'm just bringing this out to say that Sarah had a believing husband. And so everything about her should have followed this believing husband. And she was a holy woman. And then, and I think she was a weaker vessel, like in verse 7. And husbands were supposed to dwell with them according to knowledge. And I do think that Abraham learned to dwell with Sarah according to knowledge as he got to know her better. And he learned to honor her. All men do not know how to be the kind of Christian husbands that they want to be. Like Abraham just came out of the Ur of Chaldeans with a different kind of background. And God had to teach him many things. He had to teach him that if he wanted his prayers answered, that he and Sarah had to dwell together and be heirs together in the grace of life. And so Abraham had a lot of learning to do, and so did Sarah. And they should be with one mind and having compassion one and another. And I won't get into all that because then I'll start telling men that's doing one man's business. And I can't tell them that stuff ever. Oh, my goodness. I forgot all about Cindy. Just tell them.